to the House Revenue, or excuse me, House
Revenue.
Boy, how'd that happen? My goodness.
That's more fun.
They have more bills than we do. House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources for April 10th, 2003. We have a full hearing today. We will probably run to the 4 o'clock at least hour, perhaps to 5. Depends on how we get through today's agenda. If you have signed up on the sign-up sheets for any of the bills that have public hearings today, and you are a public official or a professional lobbyist, you need to make note of the fact that as signing that sign-up sheet, that you're acknowledging that your testimony has to be truthful and accurate as in accordance with the law. If you're a member of the public here, that does not apply to you. However, we still want your testimony to be truthful and accurate. So, having said that, we are going to open up a work session on House Bill 2436. And Representative Hunt, you had a question that you would like the department to answer.
I would, Mr. Chair.
Chair, I'd like to call Ron Englund from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you've had an opportunity to see the base bill and to see the Dash 2 amendments. My question for you is this bill, with the Dash 2 amendments, would it completely open up hound hunting for cougars completely without any kind of regulation, or does it give the Department and the Commission a tool that can be utilized selectively as you see fit?
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, for the record, Ron Englund, Wildlife Division Administrator, ODFW. The department, through statutory authority, specifically ORS 496.162, has the ability to set seasons and methods of take as long as it falls within what we're statutorily allowed to do. So if, as the Dash 2 amendment I was just recently handed were to be move forward, our commission would have the ability to regulate any take allowed and the use of dogs allowed, and could make that as restrictive as they felt it was necessary to make, or as liberal as they felt it was necessary to make.
Does that answer your question, Representative? Okay, thank you. Representative Hunt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think all the members of the committee have the Dash 2 amendments before you. I would move the Dash 2 amendment.
Okay, members, Representative Hunt has moved the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2436. Discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Did the committee administrator just... Okay, thank you. Okay, did it.
Okay, very good. Further discussion? Hearing none, clerk call the roll.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
But this on the Dash 2, right?
Yes.
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Work?
Aye.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Chair Frost?
Aye. The Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2436 is hereby adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilman.
I move that we pass 2436 to the House as amended with a due pass
recommendation.
Recommendation, that's the word I want. Thank you.
Okay.
Sure.
Remember, the motion has been made. Discussion? Representative Burr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to put on the record that I will be voting against this. I was received some testimony from Dr. Paul Baer, who's one of the, if not the top, cougar expert in the nation. And his testimony really convinced me that, put it quite simply, that sport hunting does not reduce the risk of cougar attacks on humans. And if anybody would like to see his research, I'd be more than happy to provide it. But for these reasons and all the other testimony we've received, and the fact that, as the buttons say, the voters have spoken, I will be opposing this.
Thank you, Representative. Additional comments? Representative Byer?
Yes. Put in an awkward position, but I had been convinced that there is a public safety issue. I was never convinced that there was that issue on bears, which is why we attempted to separate them. And this bill will put the control back into Fish and Wildlife, who are able to manage it and control where there are hot spots, where there are problems, and I support it for that reason.
Thank you, Representative. Further comments? Representative Nelson was next, and then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when we establish what our priorities are here at the state, number one has to be safety and security, no matter what. And, you know, the truth is I love wildlife very much. In my own county of Yamhill County, we operate the first non-kill animal shelter and have placed 19,000, all sorts of, you name it, animals. But the time we had to draw a line in the sand was when we got vicious personality animals that could not be controlled. And I think only in that extreme condition. And having seen individuals who've been mauled by the cougars, unfortunately, I think it's our responsibility to protect all our citizens. And it's my belief that we'll do so very carefully and with great discretion. And I will be voting yes for this bill for the reason of safety.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The when we reported out the full repeal, I voted against that for much of the same reasons that Representative Byer did, because I think through all the volumes and volumes of mail that we've all received from probably from folks in this room and from throughout the state, I have become convinced that there is a problem with cougars. I mean, I have a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old, and I look at these kids out in the hearing audience today. That, for me, is the motivation of how do we make sure that we give not just a full open season for the sake of sport hunting, but that we give the tool that the Department of Fish and Wildlife said they did not have and said it was the most effective tool they could utilize for dealing with what's become a doubled cougar population in the last 8 years. And so that's why I'll be supporting this this amended version that leaves in the provisions related to prohibiting bait and hound hunting for bears, but allows ODF&W to have the ability to control the cougar population that they say they cannot currently control with the tools available to them. So I appreciate this middle ground. The beauty of middle ground is none of the interest groups likes it, and those who wanted the full repeal hate this amendment. Those who wanted no change hate this amendment, and that probably means we're about in the right spot in terms of public policy.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Krupp. I'll add to what Representative Hunt just said. My concern was that the Fish and Wildlife could not even address all the incident calls and complaints that they get, some that they don't get. We heard compelling testimony on the public safety issue. So for me, it's a good bill, and I will be voting yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I say one quick
comment?
Yes. Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you all for showing up, and hopefully you all will be able to make it again when this is heard in the Senate, and just appreciate your attention to the process.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Representative. I want to thank Representative Hunt and Byer for being diligent to work through this issue. Thank you very, very much to the two of you. And will clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Ward.
Three no's.
Now, wait a second. Okay.
Representative
Gilman.
Aye.
Chair Crump. Aye. House Bill 2436 is hereby passed to the House as amended with a due pass recommendation. We close the work session on House Bill 2436. The chair will be the carrier. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 2915. Ray, you want to tell us what this bill is about?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
House Bill 2915 modifies membership and method of appointment of the Oregon Forest Resources Institute Board of Directors. It allows persons paying harvest tax on forest products to request a refund and directs the Board of Directors to adopt rules relating to refunding monies from the Oregon Forest Resources Institute Fund. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you, Ray.
We also have, Mr. Chair, in the room, former Senate President Pro Tem of Senator Kintai, Robert Kintai.
Senator Kintai, welcome. And why don't you come forward with Ray Wilkinson, if that's all right, Ray. Is that okay? Okay, very good. And anyone else? Who else do you have? Okay, very good. Come forward, if you would, please. Thank you. And for the record, of course, state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ray Wilkinson with the Oregon Forest Industries Council here today to testify in support of House Bill 2915. Really appreciate your efforts in getting this bill drafted and introduced and scheduled for a hearing. That's very much appreciated. With me today are former Senator Bob Kintai, who served 12 years in the state Senate from 1987 to 1999. Is that about right?
Yep.
And he's here today as a member of the board of the Oregon Forest Resources Institute, which is what this bill is about. And also with me today is Leslie Lehman, who is the executive director of the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. And she has been, OFRI has been in existence for a little over 10 years, and she's been the executive director the entire time. Real quickly, I'll introduce Leslie, and she'll do the bulk of this. But the Oregon Forest Resources Institute is a forestry educational quasi-state agency that has some similarities to agricultural commodity commissions. And as a result, the Attorney General has identified a couple of legal issues that are similar to the issues that the agricultural commodity commissions are struggling with at the moment, that they are saying to OFRI, you need to go to the legislature and ask for a modification of the governance structure of OFRI. And so that's why we're here today. I'm here as a representing the taxpayers. The OFRI is funded through a harvest tax on timber production. That's the sole source of revenue, and so my members basically pay the bills at OFRI. And as a representative of the taxpayer, I'm here to say that we fully support OFRI. It's a very important and worthwhile, valuable program, valuable institution, and we'd rather not have to do this, what this bill does, but we've become convinced that for OFRI's own good, this is a necessary step. So with that, I'll turn it over to Leslie, and she can tell you what the bill does and a little bit more about OFRI.
Okay, but before you go any further, members, how many of you are familiar with the commodity commission problem that we have? So everyone is good. So I just wanted to make sure everyone was up to speed on that. By the way, we will most likely be hearing something from the Senate soon on that issue that will be just as much fun as a lot of our other bills that we've had lately. So go ahead, Leslie. Welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Chairman Krupp. I hope this is more fun. Those are some of the things you have to deal with. I appreciate this opportunity to testify. As Ray said, we were established by the Oregon Legislature in 1991 to promote public understanding of Oregon's forest resources and forest practices. And we carry this mission out through a variety of forestry education programs that range from workshops for K through 12 teachers and students to training for landowners. And I've brought a few examples, which I think have been given to you of some of our public information products, and I hope that you're familiar with some of them. Ray told you that while OFRI and the commodity commissions do share some similarities, our purposes are very different. Our mission is education rather than product marketing. Our implementing legislation specifically directs us to serve as a source of accurate forestry information, working with the College of Forestry at Oregon State and the Oregon Department of Forestry. And as Ray also explained, we're funded exclusively by harvest tax on forest products producers, and we're governed largely by a board representing those producers who are elected by their peers. And that board consists of small, medium, and large forest products producers, a small woodland owner, a representative of forestry employees, and those are our voting members. We also have the dean of the college by legislation serving on our board, and a public representative appointed by the president of the Senate, Speaker of the House, and those are ex officio members. OFRI has functioned extremely well under this structure, we've enjoyed the support of constituents, and we believe we've developed a reputation for providing credible forestry information, both with the public and with landowners, and are helping connect the forestry sector to rural and urban leaders and in a way that helps move forward our economic recovery and environmental performance at the same time. So if OFRI isn't broke, why are we asking you to help fix it? And we wish we didn't have to. But as you are already familiar, the Oregon Department of Justice has said we really don't have a choice about this. We have to do it. And I won't, since you have expressed your familiarity with the reasons for that, I won't go into detail, but basically it involves a Supreme Court decision that ruled mandatory assessments by commissions are compelled speech, which may be in violation of the First Amendment. And there's also a related state constitutional issue related to delegation of authority. And both of those things are addressed in the bill that that's before you today. So the Department of Justice has recommended that we can fix this problem by becoming more closely tied to state government. We already are a state agency, but we need to tie ourselves more closely because government speech is protected speech. And basically the fixes are ask the state forester to appoint our board rather than conduct the election for our board. In current law, he conducts the election. Instead, he would appoint them, but the producer qualifications would remain intact as they are in existing law. So that shouldn't change very much. It also removes the petition by dissolution provision in the legislation, meaning that your action would be required to dissolve us. And the other thing that is included in this bill is a tax rebate for producers who feel that their freedom of speech is violated. And we're doing this both to assuage their concerns that this is somehow a merger with another agency and that they would completely lose their identity. But more importantly, it strengthens our legal position in the light of these charges or potential charges. There is an alternative proposal, HB 2914, which would dramatically change OFRI. It would take us out of state government. We'd be a nonprofit organization funded by a tax credit. And both of those bills would address the legal problem we have before us. But the OFRI board unanimously prefers HB 2915. We're already a state organization. It functions very well in that regard. It's the least amount of change to fix the problem. And with those three changes, an appointed board rather than elected, eliminating the dissolution provision, providing a rebate opportunity for taxpayers, we can continue our work on behalf of Oregonians, and we respectfully urge you to pass HB 2915.
Thank you. Senator, what a pleasure to see you again. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Crump and members of the committee, for this opportunity to testify on House Bill 2915.
But, Bob, you still have to state your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I've been away from here a while. All right. I'm Bob Kintai, certified forester from the Springfield area, and I am a member of the board of directors of the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and on this bill, which addresses the legal issues facing Oregon Forest Resources Institute, henceforth referred to as OFRI. You might be interested to know that I was a member of the Senate committee that drafted the original bill creating OFRI in 1991, and now I am the elected small woodland representative on the OFRI board. So I have some institutional memory of this issue, and I speak today on behalf of the entire OFRI Board of Directors. As a member of the legislature, As a former member of the legislature, I appreciate the challenges before you this session, and I wish you well in any of the difficult decisions you need to make. Needless to say, I'm not missing being here.
Well, this is...
But I admire you for doing it. Fortunately, a decision on 2915 shouldn't be a difficult one. It solves a legal problem confronting a very effective organization that builds public understanding of forestry and assists woodland owners, landowners, with the training they need to be good land stewards. OFRI helps bridge the gap between urban and rural Oregonians, and I'd like to emphasize that. I think that's a very important thing that we're doing. We hear a lot about the two Oregons, and I think we're having some effect in this area. I'm one of the landowners that has OFRI tours on their land each summer. The public is invited, and the feedback we've gotten on these have been very positive. The people said, well, I never knew you did this, or I never knew you did that. And so it's been very encouraging to me as a forester and a landowner. So that the state's world-class forest resources can contribute to the Oregon economy in a more substantial way while continuing our strong environmental performance. We do emphasize environmental aspects, too, and see that in a lot of our publications. OFRI would not seek the changes called for in House Bill 2915 if they were not necessary. Our organization functions very effectively and with good results and high levels of collaboration. But the Attorney General tells us, in light of recent court decisions, changes are needed to protect our legal position and to preserve our ability to continue this important work for the people of Oregon. The changes include a board appointed by the state forester rather than an elected board, and it would still represent the same consumer, same producer groups, but eliminating the ability of OFRI constituents to petition for dissolution. The legislature only could dissolve it then, and adding a tax rebate provision. We like OFRI the way it is and want to change only what is necessary to fix the problem. The OFRI board unanimously recommends House Bill 2915 as a way to accomplish this. I respectfully urge you to pass House Bill 2915.
Thank you, Senator. Members, questions of our distinguished panel? Yes, Representative Gilman.
Leslie, I'm curious, because I don't know what you do with your budget now. Does it have to go to the Department of Forestry then to be approved or ratified or anything like that?
The OFRI board approves the budget. We're required to give a public hearing opportunity on our budget so it's noticed. Constituents have an opportunity to review it, to comment on it, and then it goes to the state forester, and he makes sure that the process we followed was legal, that we're spending money legally, and that we provided those public review opportunities. He does not have program authority, he doesn't say the amount is right, but he makes sure we're doing it legally.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Question for you. In especially Leslie, your testimony says it provides 2915 provides for a tax rebate for producers who claim that their freedom of speech has been violated. Do you have anyone that you would expect that's going to come and ask you for that?
We have no reason to expect that. There, our relationship with our constituents has been very strong, and we're really doing it to strengthen the legal defense. Okay. And also to make sure people don't become concerned about loss of identity.
Bob, you have a thought?
Yes, I'm representing a small woodland owners, and I have much contact with that group. And they have been very, very supportive. I have not heard anything from many of them. And that's, if we did have that, you'd sort of expect it would be some of the homeowners. And I suppose there will be a few. But, I certainly don't sense any widespread discontent.
I would echo that, Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the larger forest landowners. This has been 99% smooth sailing for the past 12 years between the taxpayers and the board and the staff at OFRI, and there's been very great high level of satisfaction with how this program has been run, and I would be very surprised if there's any significant impact on the budget because of this provision.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jennifer Wright, Oregon Department of Forestry. Ann Smith, can you find it? Eddie Smith. I can't get them both. Well, I didn't see Ted's name on okay. Sorry, Jennifer. Didn't mean to hang you out there all by yourself, but. All righty. Thank you.
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, I'm Ted Lawrence, an assistant state forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. I have with me today Jennifer Wright, who's from our Coos Bay office, who drafted our testimony and is on an assignment with me to experience the legislative process, and she now understands.
Couldn't have picked a better day.
She now understands you do have a sense of humor.
I try.
People have described things very well. I do want to make a couple points. One, we work in partnership with OFRI. We have had an incredibly positive relationship with the organization as well as working with the board of directors. In my opinion, and I've been around for a long time now, I guess, OFRI is probably one of the most efficient and effective organizations I've been exposed to. And they produce high-quality products. They, with their board of directors, develops a strategic planning process and tactics that address their education information needs. They've developed an incredible process to produce products that address the range of needs of forest landowners and operators. And I want to draw attention to one of them, and I think some of you have seen this. It's Oregon's Forest Protection Law Manual that was published this past year, which was recognized as the Forestry Book of the Year. But it's an illustrated manual that's very comprehensive. There you've got it. And then in partnership with OSU and OFRI, the Department of Forestry has held a range of training sessions with the operator community to bring that home to them. And it's been an incredible example of how a partnership can produce very positive results. And I think they should be commended for their efforts. People mentioned the minor effects that the bill would have on the Department of Forestry in terms of our role of appointing the board members. We view that as a technical change. The process itself we would envision be more or less the same, where we would basically look at the recommendations and votes of the membership in terms of identifying who should be appointed and going from there. So I don't see any process that is going to disrupt the current outcome in terms of who the board members are.
Okay. Jennifer, do you have anything since you wrote all this magnificent testimony that Ted just plagiarized? I mean, summarized. Sorry. What do you have to add? Anything?
Representative Croft, thanks for the opportunity, but I think you summarized it very well.
Okay.
Although I could add that I'm the service forester in Coos Bay, and I know that manual has been really, really well appreciated by the landowners, because I work with the small woodland owners, and there's a lot of laws, and it really simplifies it a lot for them, and they enjoy working with it.
Well, I would say I found it to be very helpful. To a poor, uneducated farm boy like me, it's really nice to have pictures and illustrations. It really helps. It works out well. Now, it really is very, very informative, and I think it just spells out clearly what you do and what you don't do, and gives great examples of that. I wish we had this for like legislators, for like the budget or things. Never mind. Anyway, thank you both very much. I appreciate that. And we have one more person signed up testimony, John Popino. Did I say that correct, John? I didn't massacre your name.
Well, massacre, I didn't recognize it.
Thanks, John. That makes me feel a lot better. Welcome, and for the record, state your name.
My name is John Popino. I'm the president of Oregon Small Woodlands Association. And I want to go on record as indicating that Oregon Small Woodlands Association very strongly supports OFRI and the work that they have been doing in the past. And I have no reason to expect that that would change any. But we have not taken a position on either one of these bills. We're considering some modification to the current language. I guess we'd say that we're discussing the process that board members would be selected, appointed, however, the oversight, the budget oversight process, then the pros and cons of some type of that refund the for the folks that feel that OFRI might not be speaking for them. Our Government Affairs Committee is currently studying this, and we expect for them to have a position statement for the board to review at our April 24th meeting. So, and we look forward to the opportunity to continue discussing this and working through a good conclusion for it.
Yeah, thank you, John. I'm sure you will continue to. It's necessary for us to move the bill through the process here on the House side. Your board meeting is April 24th, and we have to conclude all work on House bills by the 18th of April. So you'll need to obviously address that over there, and we're happy to work with you in terms of anything that you may achieve over there that comes back in terms of a bill that would be modified from what its current form is.
Very good. We appreciate that. So.
Okay. Well, thanks for testifying. Any further questions of John Popino, so that I said it correctly? I made a note of that. All right. Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2915? Hearing none, we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2915 and open up a work session on 2915. Representative Gilman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2915 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Members, discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Gilman, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
Sure.
Okay. House Bill 2915 is hereby passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and we will close our work session. Thank you, Representative. And we are not going to hear House Bill 2914 today. We'll let sleeping dogs lie on that particular issue since it appears we have a more firm direction with this bill. All righty. Let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 2205. Ray, you want to tell us what this bill is about?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2205 requires surface mining operation permit application. Requires a surface mining operation permit applicant to submit a survey of lands affected by the operation. It requires a map and survey submission for all operations, regardless of size of the operation, and it prescribes an effective date. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, current law requires maps to be part of an applicant's reclamation plan for surface mining operations. Current law also requires surface mining applicants to submit to the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries the size and legal description of the lands affected by the operations, if the lands are more than 10 acres. This measure adds survey to mapping requirements and removes the acreage reference, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Ray. Do we have anyone besides Gary, did you want to come up and say some words? Why don't you? Rich, come on up.
Okay.
Excuse me, somebody left their purse here.
Uh-oh.
Well,
I'm glad that's not yours, Gary. I really am.
Now, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Gary Lynch. I'm the Assistant Director of the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. Suffice it to say, I think when we crafted this bill, while we had our most important goal was to find a way to help small miners in eastern Oregon. And frankly, the word survey to us meant something different than survey, understanding the registered professional surveyors. I think the best thing to do at this time is to not go forth with this bill. Let us work in the interim to find a way to help the small miners with their problems, and at the same time not tread on the toes of the registered professional surveyors.
Okay, Rich, you concur with that too?
My name is Rich Angstrom, the president of OCAPA, Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association. This measure, from the last discussion we had, would be a very costly measure to sand and gravel operators and quarry operators around the state. We concur.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2205? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2205 and declare it in the boneyard.
Do you need a motion for that?
No, I have a feeling we'll just run out of time before we can hear it again. So,
Mr. Chair, I believe the technical term is in committee upon adjournment.
Yes, that is a great. It will most likely be in committee upon adjournment. Thank you all very much.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I understand you voted on House Bill 2915.
Yes, and we would be happy to suspend the rules and allow you to vote on that.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we suspend the rules.
Okay.
For the purpose of
allowing Representative Smith to vote on House Bill
2915.
Thank you.
Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative, how do you vote?
Aye.
Very good. Representative Smith votes aye on House Bill 2915.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's move on. David, would you call Representative Cruz's office and ask him to come forward and testify on House Bill 2521? In the meantime, we probably also should call Representative Butler's office and ask him to get ready on House Bill 2574. In the meantime, members, let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 3549. Ray, let me explain this concept since it's my bill. What we're doing here is some time ago we had a problem called the ABT bankruptcy in Oregon that dramatically affected farmers. This is 2521. Dramatically affected Oregon farmers, and he was asking about Cruz's bill, Representative Cruz's bill.
I'm sorry.
It isn't going to take us long to get through this issue. We formed a work group of myself and producers and bankers and everyone involved with what happens when a farmer gives his crop to a seed dealer or a warehouseman or something of that nature, and they take the crop, declare bankruptcy, and don't pay the farmer. We had a work group, and we came up with a number of recommendations in terms of strengthening Oregon's lien laws to help farmers recover their money. We passed that out, worked out very nicely last session, 2001. Well, one of the things we talked about is we had a presentation from the Idaho Department of Agriculture on a program they have, and they have a bonding requirement for their dealers and warehousemen that is a little different than ours. And they also have an indemnity fund, which is a fund that farmers pay into a little bit over time, and it reaches they have a maximum of $5 million on it. And if a farmer finds himself in this circumstance where they've given their crop to someone, that they've sold it to someone, that person's taken the crop and not paid the farmer, they can go to that fund and recover the amount of money that they were out in that circumstance if they couldn't recover it any other way. It's kind of a safety net. Over the years, we found that they had something in the order of 18 claims against it since the early 80s or late 70s, whenever they had put that program in effect. And they had never paid out more. They paid out less than $2 million in claims total. So what it really amounted to was small farmers that had problems with a particular company, and they were able to recover their dollars. We talked about that as a concept that would be explored down the road. Well, this is down the road. And we're too late in the session for us to deal with this issue here. So what I'm going to propose is that we strike all the language out of this bill. And in essence, the Dash 1 amendment, which I don't know if I'm not sure I passed that out to everyone. No, I haven't. Ray, would you do that for me, please?
I'd love to, Mr. Chair. I'll go make copies. I'll be back in a second.
Okay. The Dash 1 amendment basically creates a task force to look at this idea during the interim. And I think having just gotten that this morning, I'd like to further amend my amendment. But I want members, I wanted to bring this idea up in front of you right now so that you had some sense of what it was we're trying to achieve. I'm not saying that the task force would come up with anything concrete, but I think we ought to talk about it. We ought to talk about those issues, not so much in relation to the ABT circumstance, because the ABT circumstance was such a massive bankruptcy and it left farmers holding the bag for $45 million. We could never have a bonding requirement or indemnity fund large enough to cure that, and that wouldn't be its intent. I'm suggesting that we talk about this to establish perhaps a combination plan of a bonding and indemnity fund like Idaho, or maybe we just have an indemnity fund that the dealers and the farmers pay into on kind of an equal basis, so that you would end up with a safety net for those farmers, those small farmers who maybe have a problem. That's all I'm going to propose with this bill, is that we talk about it, we get testimony from it, and see if it is a direction that we ought to go in terms of even establishing a task force to study this issue in the interim that will be coming up. So,
question.
Yes.
Are you going to propose a task force in this bill?
Yes.
This session then?
Yeah, and that's what the Dash 1 amendment does. I want to slightly modify that because it's got too many members of the House and Senate on it.
Can there be too many?
I think so. I think that's obvious.
Okay.
At any rate, for the moment, we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 3549 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2521. Representative Cruz, you're back with us. Great to see you again. What are we doing with your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Jeff Cruz, State Representative, District 7, and thank you for your patience. Been a rather busy day.
It has.
And I've had to figure out how to be in three places at once, but I'm still working on it. House Bill 2521 is a revisit of an issue we have visited for several sessions now, and it's landowner preference tags to allow landowners the ability to deal with property damage, you know, to make it kind of the short and sweet of it. We had this bill in last session. The original bill was in last session. We did not get very far because even inside of constituencies, there's disagreements on this issue. And so I resubmitted the bill this session. And a good friend of mine from ODF&W in Douglas County came up to me and said, I've been working on this concept. And the concept was a pilot project in southwestern Oregon. And so he explained it to me, and it sounded wonderful. I said, you know, let's get some stuff on the ground here, and let's get some experience behind a model and see how that plays out in the rest of the state. And so so I asked ODF&W to put it into language, and then we drafted the amendment. And Unfortunately, the Dash 1 just added the pilot project to the original bill. So we came back, Mr. Chair, with a Dash 2 that is the gut and stuff that the Dash 1 was supposed to be, because there are still some issues in the original bill. But my intention, Mr. Chair, with the support of this committee, and I think with the support of ODF&W, is to actually get a pilot going, and so, you know, so we have a test lab, more or less, and we felt that Southwest Oregon was the appropriate place for that to happen.
Representative, for some reason, we don't have the Dash 2s.
No.
I bet we can find some for you.
I bet we can, and that would be a good thing. So,
I've got a copy. One copy.
David can certainly do that for us, or Ray can, one of the two.
Okay, and basically, Mr. Chair, you have the Dash 1s, and the Dash 2s are the Dash 1s, except it's got above it the deletion of the rest of the bill.
Representative Cruz, allow me to apologize. It appears that you gave me the Dash 2 amendments, and apparently I have misplaced them because I don't have them in my folder, and it's my fault. So I'll bear the blame, members. You can give me 50 lashes with a wet noodle. It'll be fine. So thank you for...
Representative Worth, I would suggest something stronger than a wet noodle.
Okay. Wet noodle, huh?
No, I'm not entertaining any emotions. I'm sorry. Forgive me for bringing it up.
So,
the words on my part. Okay, so Representative, the Dash 2s, if I'm following you correctly, gut the bill, leave the pilot project in.
Mr. Chair, I fully support the Dash 2s, and I'm going to let the folks from ODF&W explain the details of the pilot. But I absolutely fully support this. It's time we got off the dime on this and got something on the ground. So okay. I think this is a very appropriate move for us to do.
Questions?
Don't ask me questions. They're the ones with the answers.
Okay. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Question. Yeah. Oh, you were going to do it.
Well, Chair, I'd like to call Ron Anglin and Steve Denny. If you'd both come forward and explain it. To paraphrase the good representative. I know it's not King's English, but I got to be accurate here, since I'm a government official.
Thank you, Chair Krupp, members of the committee. For the record, once again, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator from ODFW. Along with Steve Denny, who's the Wildlife Division, or the Southwest Regional Manager from Roseburg. Both of us have spent a long time working in Douglas County, and we'll try not to slip into the Douglas County English also. As Representative Cruz has mentioned, the Landowner Preference Program has been around for a while. It has at times been contentious, but it has served valuable function from the department standpoint in allowing us in a lot of different ways to address some landowner concerns. And this was a topic that the Wildlife Damage Council, that was devised during the last legislative session, discussed multiple times during the last year and a half, with a commitment that we would continue to convene the Damage Council during the next year and a half, to continue to discuss landowner preference and ways to make the process better and to have some more benefits from a public hunting standpoint and also from a landowner standpoint. One of the concepts that was brought before the council was, in fact, this landowner preference pilot study program that Steve will explain to you in just a moment. And the Damage Council, which was made up of representatives from the hunting community and from the landowning community, all fully endorsed this concept and fully recommended that we bring it forward to the legislative body. With that, I'll turn it over to Steve for an explanation.
Thank you, Ron. Steve, welcome. For the record.
For the record, my name is Steve Denny. I'm the Southwest Regional Manager for ODF&W out of Roseburg. As Ron mentioned, the Landowner Preference Program has been a very valuable tool for us to help resolve elk damage on private lands in Southwest Oregon. We probably use it that particular process more than any other area in the state.
even though it is a valuable tool, there are some problems with it, or at least it's confusing and somewhat time-consuming for both landowners and our biologists to work through the program. And so I've been working with our landowners, particularly our landowners, and with Oregon State Police and with the sportsmen's groups to try to improve the process. And in that, recognizing that the program was somewhat contentious in other parts of the state, we recommended a pilot program in Southwest Oregon. Primarily to streamline the process, make it more efficient for our landowners and our biologists to implement the program, and to be more efficient in resolving, in this case, primarily elk damage to private lands. The primary differences between this and the original LOP bill is it does redefine the definition of damage. In the original LOP bill, damage is defined as currently occurring. This program would change the definition to presently occurring, or an area with a history of damage and action, such as an emergency hunt or a controlled hunt, those types of things, or what we call an elk de-emphasis area. And these are two units in Southwest Oregon, the Melrose and the Applegate, which are primarily privately owned. Well over 90% of the unit is in private ownership and suffers lots of elk damage. And so those are areas where we do not want to encourage elk populations to grow and would even like to reduce them. Tags would be available to the landowner on the basis of need to resolve damage and not on the basis of acreage. Right now, tags are issued by acreage figure on a revolving scale where they get more tags the more acres they own. This would do away with it and allow us to issue the number of tags we feel is necessary to resolve the damage. We have a 30-day deadline requirement on the current bill. This would change to eliminate that and make it based on an agreement with the biologist and the landowner on how long that tag needs to be valid in order to get rid of the elk and resolve the damage. It also slightly modifies the exchange rules. Under the current rules, landowner can only exchange a controlled hunt tag for an LOP tag in order to resolve damage. We have quite a few controlled hunt seasons, which is a general season in Southwest Oregon, and those people that have general tags don't qualify to exchange them. And so this would allow that process to occur. And also, as I said, it would eliminate the need to issue the number of tags based on acreage, but on the need to resolve damage. But we would like to put a cap on it. There was some concern from the sporting group that we would issue, a person would have 40 or 80 acres, a relatively small property. We might be asked to recommend issuing, 10, 20, an unreasonable number of tags. So we tried to put a cap on it at no more than five tags valid at any one time. As I said, this is a real valuable program. It does allow landowners to resolve damage on their lands with people they know and trust. They can assign individuals to receive the tags. And this is merely a way to resolve the damage. We have some reasons in Southwest Oregon, I think, where it's an appropriate place to have this type of a pilot program. We have some really good landowners that we've worked with for years down there, a good group of sportsmen that I think, and OSP officers, I think we can work through the differences and come back with some recommendations to the original program at the end of this time period, and hopefully work through the issues without committing the whole state to it. And so that was my reason for suggesting this area for a pilot program. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Steve and Ron, sounds like you've got pretty broad agreement amongst most of the people who have concerns here that we ought to establish this as a pilot program and see how it works. Is that right?
Yes, Representative Cherkrup. There is agreement, a lot of agreement amongst the landowner groups. Sportsmen's groups, of course, have some concerns about it. I think they're willing to try this particular program. They want to see how it works and what kind of changes and what kind of effects it has. OSP, I just spoke to them day before yesterday again, and they're willing to participate in it. So I think there is broad agreement, and I think a willingness to try to resolve some of the issues that's around the LOP, particularly on the damage side, trying to resolve damage.
Okay, questions, members? Thank you, gentlemen. Greg Attican and Katie Fast.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Greg Addington with the Oregon Farm Bureau. I'm sure it'll come as a shock to you that I'm going to talk to you about wildlife damage and how it affects our members yet again, but it is a big issue. The landowner preference tag is really the closest thing that we have to some form of compensation for the damage that occurs on ag land. Currently, the program, as you've just heard, I mean, it's cumbersome, it's not that efficient, and really it's more of a pain to a lot of our members than it's worth to use. I really appreciate the work that Steve Denny and ODF&W have done on this issue. This pilot program is going to occur in the area of the state where I come from, and I have a lot of experience with the landowners there, and I know that they have spent a lot of time working through the issues and addressing the concerns. So we support the pilot program. We look forward to addressing the statewide issues in two more years and through the Animal Damage Council. So with that, I'll end it.
Thank you, Greg. Katie.
Katie Fast, Oregon Cattlemen's. I have to say our membership is a little disappointed with the amendments, just that they're limited to one area. There were, in the original bill, it did allow that landowners could hunt the management unit, which they're suffering damage from. With the current program and in the pilot program, the landowner preference tags are limited to your property. And that has been a conflict with landowners because they will have a unit of elk that will depredate on their property in their hay fields, grain fields, so forth. And then that management or that unit moves, and the landowner isn't able to move off his property to utilize his tag. And that has been a frustration with our membership with the program. However, the amendments do make some positive programs to streamline the program and make some improvements in it. We are looking forward to seeing how this pilot program will work in that area, and hopefully next session bring forth some recommendations from the Damage Council to help alleviate our membership's concerns. I just can't give 100% support to this measure.
Okay, fair enough. Questions, members? Yes, Representative, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure if they're the ones to answer it or if the agency. Is this in replace what we now have as the landowner preferences pilot program or in addition to?
Chair Krupp, Representative Smith, the pilot, it will not change our original program. This will be a pilot project in addition to.
In addition to. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you. Anyone else here to testify on 2521? I see lots of hunting folks in the back. Okay, everybody's good?
Oh.
No.
Thumbs up.
Oh, okay, thumbs up. All right. Wait a second here. What did I miss? Wake me up, Representative. Thank you. Why'd you do that? Okay, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2521 and open up a work session on House Bill 2521.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we move House Bill 2521 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Excuse me, we don't have to do the dash two amendments.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair. See, Katie was so persuasive.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt wants to rephrase
his motion. Yes, Representative Hunt would like to rephrase his motion.
To rephrase that motion, Mr. Chair, I would move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2521.
Okay, members, dash two amendments for House Bill 2521 have been moved. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Hunt.
Now, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the amended version of House Bill 2521 to the floor with the pass recommendation.
Members, House Bill 2521 with the dash two amendments has been moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered, and Representative Cruz will be the carrier. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2521. Thank you, members. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2188. Ray, do we have any amendments or anything to this bill?
Mr. Chair, I am aware of no amendments to House Bill 2188. Let me double check here for 1 second. No, Mr. Chair, we have no amendments to 2188.
Okay, very good. Does the department or I'm just going to open this up to anyone have any interest in speaking further on House Bill 2188? Hearing none. Members, this bill has a subsequent referral to Ways, I believe, or Revenue.
Mr. Chair, the bill has subsequent referral to Revenue, so the motion, if given, would be with or without recommendation to the Committee on Revenue.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
I'll move House Bill 2188 to Revenue with a due-pass recommendation.
Members, House Bill 2188 has been moved to Revenue with a due-pass recommendation. Any discussion? The chair would like to note to the committee that the small woodlands bill that we had passed out some time ago is apparently facing some slowness, I guess, for lack of a better term, over on the Senate. And this bill will move this to revenue where they'll be able to reconcile, hopefully, those two issues to some extent. So just to give you that quick update. No further discussion. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. House Bill 2188 is hereby passed on to the House Revenue Committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well, House Bill, let's reopen a... We're going to close the work session on House Bill 2188, and we're going to reopen a public hearing on House Bill 3549. Members, I briefly just want to give some folks who came here today an opportunity to share their thoughts with us on this concept. And then we'll actually be done before our normal time, let alone having to work late today. Okay. Right. Chuck Craig. He was headed out the door and thought he was going to get away.
Chair, I was going to see where John Tully went.
He's walking with us.
Okay. That's fine. We'll find him in a moment.
Okay.
Thank you, David. Welcome for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record. I'm Chuck Craig, Deputy Director for the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, I did hand out some written testimony. I'm not going to go over it in detail, but it does hopefully pass along to you some observations and reflections on the issue. Just briefly, we feel that the concept of further strengthening the financial protection for Oregon agricultural commodity producers is timely and important one. We commend the chair for his efforts to encourage and lead the dialogue on this issue with the various elements of Oregon agriculture. And as noted, this is a complex issue, requires quite a bit of thought and evaluation. We support the idea fully of establishing an interim task force or work group to work through those issues.
Mike.
I think that just in conclusion, Mr. Chair, we think that the concept that's proposed is a sound objective, and we note that last session you successfully led an effort to strengthen Oregon's lien laws, which will provide more protection for Oregon farm producers by putting them at the head of the line in the event of a bankruptcy. And we think that the concepts that are identified in this bill, if properly structured, could complement that situation and that work that's already been done. So, Mr. Chair, we stand ready to assist in any way that we can, and applaud you for initiating the discussion on this, and we'll make what meager resources we have available to help with that effort.
Thank you, Chuck. We hope it's not too meager. John, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCulley. I'm here representing the Agriculture Cooperative Council and also Farm Credit Services. I think, as the chair has stated earlier today in his remarks about this bill, a lot of in the farming community have suffered through the three strikes of the AgriPAC, AgriFrozen, and ABT, the nasty A's, as I guess they're called. And we, too, see the need for further discussion on how to protect producers in this fight that they find themselves in when the person or company purchasing their product doesn't pay them. And so we look forward to working with you and other members of the committee or whoever may be involved with this to try to find additional solutions to protect those growers. And whatever services that my clients can offer, we are ready to do that.
Thank you, John. Mike, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Potato Commission. As you know, and I think fairly soon, hopefully, you will see a piece of legislation dealing with commodity commissions, and that has been our number one priority with regard to ensuring that they exist and stay healthy in the state of Oregon. So as we looked at the first piece of legislation, we wanted to make it clear that that was our number one priority. In terms of this kind of an issue, clearly, if we reach a conclusion in a task force, we're not going to have a panacea. There are organizations that will go broke. That is what our system, to a degree, is all about. The other side of this is that this is a useful purpose because we have to go out and communicate the possibilities to the stakeholders, the people that are going to pay into an indemnity fund, if that's what it ends up to be. And that is not an easy task by any means. And we can't get ahead, I've found out this many times, of the producers. Or pretty soon we'll be back there somewhere and in a cloud of dust. So we're willing to work with you. And I know they have more than meager resources because they have very bright people over at the Department of Agriculture. So with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. I appreciate that. I hope to have some Dash 2 amendments shortly, and they'll be available. We'll work this. Thank you very much. With that, members, we're going to close the public. Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 3549? Hearing none, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3549. And if I am mistaken, I think we have completed our work for the day. Have we not?
Mr. Chair, you are most efficient.
Which one? 25. Oh, yeah, 2574. I'm sorry. I missed
that. Back.
Yes. Oh, darn. Okay, House Bill, we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2574. Do we have anyone here to testify on House Bill 2574? David? And have we heard from Representative Butler's office? Not yet. Okay. Well, we do. We have lots of people here. Okay. Oh boy, I'm glad. I've had a lot of folks mad at me. Just y'all come forward. Rod Harder, Greg Addington, Glenn Stonebrink. Is Sally Matter here? Sally, are you here from the Sierra Club? Nope, don't see her. Jim Entz. Jim was outside earlier, I think it was. Okay. And Rod is here. Claude Witter. Al, are you going to come up in a moment, too? Okay. Yeah, why don't you three sit in the back? You'll be not the B team, but you'll be shift number two. Okay, the first shift is here. Members, we need to recess. We have a technical problem that we may have to adjust in a previous legislation that we passed out here today. Would you could just give us a moment? you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
I'll make a motion that we suspend the rules.
For the purposes of?
Moving House Bill 2915 back to committee.
Okay, members.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I kind of wonder why it needs to go to Ways and Means, and I'm not sure I'm going to support this.
Well, I'm...
not to be difficult, but I think it was a good bill.
Is.
I think it's a good bill, too. I don't understand what's going on here, but we're just trying to follow orders from the Speaker's office, technically. Ray?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2915 has subsequent referral to Ways and Means. When it was passed out, it was passed out to the floor.
Oh, I see. I see.
When it should have been passed out to Ways and Means. We have been asked, as a committee, to bring it back into committee and hold on to it until the parties involved in the negotiations can work out whether they would like to see if the sub-referral can be rescinded and just take care of the matter in this committee, or whether it actually does need that subsequent referral. So that's what we're looking at.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative?
Just a clarification then. So on my motion to move it back to committee, it's just going to stay here in committee until that's addressed.
Well, that's the ultimate outcome. Your motion is just to suspend the rules,
right.
and then we'll do that.
But okay.
Yeah, that's the idea. Does that clarify anything, Representative Beyer?
I guess.
Can I ask this question?
Yes, Representative. Feel free.
If the issue is not resolved and the subsequent referral to Ways and Means holds, then at that point we have... I'm just trying to figure out what's going to be the best way to get this bill moving. I hate to leave it sitting here, and I hate to send it on to the Ways and Means process, because I don't see the Ways and Means connection in the bill. I understand, but apparently there is a subsequent referral. So.
Apparently there is. I guess that's a question that we should ask. We're going to stand at ease for a moment. I hope you guys are comfortable. Thank you. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw my motion to suspend the rules.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
And members of the committee, I would like to, having voted on the prevailing side, I would like to serve notice of possible reconsideration at our next scheduled committee hearing of House Bill 2915. All right, we are in a public hearing on House Bill 2574. Welcome to the first shift. Thank you for your patience. And, Rod, why don't you start off?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Herter. I'm here today at the request of Representative Butler to present his bill or the amendments thereto. And I'm also representing the Oregon United Fording Guards Association. I have taken the liberty of passing out to you a hand-engrossed version of the Dash 2 amendments that were added to the bill, in keeping with Representative Krupp's edict that I can't lie to you. If I made a mistake in there, it's a typing error. When this bill came up the first time, there was a lot of concern from a lot of different parties about what the bill did, about where it went, about the fiscal impact of the bill, about wildlife management. And so we've worked through two sets of amendments. And participating in that discussion were the Farm Bureau, Cattlemen, Oregon Hunters Association, Oregon Guides and Packers, Oregon United Sporting Dogs Association, and ODF&W. And what we did is try to address each of the concerns that the people that testified had with regards to management of fish and wildlife and the fiscal impact. First thing we did was have this committee set up on a temporary basis. The committee cannot meet for more than 15 days at a time. They can meet multiple times, and they can address problems. But what we submitted a limit as to the number of animals that could be taken by each county committee. And that would be five of each species, five bear, cougar, and the W word wolf. The reason we did that was for the fiscal impact, and what would happen would be if the committee could only activate under sections A, B, and C, and either of them would be a trigger. Any of those would be a trigger. First would be wildlife quotas in that particular county had been met, a clear and immediate danger must be posed to persons, property, and livestock by predatory animals. And the State Department of Fish and Wildlife has refused a request from the county governing body for assistance in reducing numbers of predatory animals in the county. And that addressed, I think, Representative Smith's concerns about a lack of response to some of her complaints. We limited it to five each because we're looking at probably 14 to 20 counties where this would take effect. And the fiscal impact on that would be minimal. In our view, and I can't speak for Fish and Wildlife, but in the view of those of us that met, excluding them, that would not create a very significant impact on wildlife management numbers. Additionally, we passed the Bear and Cougar Bill out today without bears. This would help to address the bear problem on a very limited and on a as-needed basis. It would not be a statewide season, but we still could address the bear problem. It would be focused on areas where bear problems were posed and proven, and we could go forth then and take care of the problems as they came up. As I said previously, this committee could be activated numerous times, as long as the limits of animals taken was not exceeded, and that would be five of each species. That's a number that basically we picked out of the air. Farm Bureau would like to have a larger number, we're sure of that. But to begin with, we thought if we could get this thing going on the ground, find out where the problems are, the numbers can be changed at some other time. As I said, each of these items that I read off would trigger it. They don't have to be all together. Any one of them by itself could trigger the action. And we have been back to Legislative Council with this, and the wording now allows it to do that. That was one of the problems with the thing that we had to have a dash three for. And the final thing that we did with this amendment was to include the change to predatory statute for bears and cougars would only be in effect during the time when this committee was activated. We would not be changing the status of bears and cougars, state or wolves, statewide to predators, except during this particular period when there was a problem. That did away with the concerns of a lot of people that we were making bears and cougars predator, and we had a wide, as you remember, a wide response of criticism to that. So with that, I'm complete my presentation for Representative Butler and be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Explained it very well.
Have you had any input from Representative Krieger on bears? See, I don't think your number's high enough, Ron.
Chair Gilman, I guess you're not the first person that's taken an issue with the numbers. And I don't know if the number's high enough or not. It would not seem to be, but the program we felt, if we get it going, then we could see what the numbers ought to be.
And I think for, and this is just a seat of a pants thing, but that sounds like where you got this number, too.
Precisely.
Cougars, I think that sounds fine, but for bear, that's where my concern is a little bit. All right, let's hear from the rest of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Greg Addington, Oregon Farm Bureau. Also, for the record, I agree with you. I think I would like to see that number a little higher, but in working with these folks, I understand the art of compromise, and so we're trying to get a little further along than where we've been. I won't add a lot. I testified to the original bill. We were in favor of the original bill. The big thing with that was the fiscal impact, I think, and so we tried to address that in order to get something done proactively. So Rod has done a nice job of going through the amendments, and we're in full support.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Glenn Stonebrink. I'm with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Not long ago, all of you had the opportunity to give an oath that you had uphold the Oregon Constitution and the United States Constitution, and I know that everyone doesn't have the opportunity to study all the words, but certainly you know that there is both the Constitution, the right to keep and bear arms, and protect yourself. That's protect a person's is in the Oregon Constitution, and your property. There's also, right at the end of the Oregon Constitution, I just bought a new blue book to make sure that it hadn't been deleted from the last session. And that section of the Constitution, I won't read it, but it basically, what was happening is the making in 1859, when they were talking about becoming a state from a territory, there were people that said, you know, this could be risky. We do certain things, and if we become a state, we may lose some of our rights. And there's a cute little section in there that says, and this is Oregon's Constitution now, that says those things that the counties were doing and those things that the citizens were doing shall be saved, as if there had been no change in government from territory to state. Well, I'm sure in 1859, if a predator was killing livestock or threatening human life, they would have taken means to eliminate that predator. That's still in our Constitution. So presently, we virtually have more rights to protect our property and our person from other people than we do from predators. So while, you know, we ask for your support to provide the citizens to protect themselves and their property from predators, even though this is, we feel, is very limited, but it certainly a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Okay. Members, questions? Thank you. All right. First shift is out. Second shift is in.
Mr.
Chair, for the record, I'm Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. We appreciate Mr. Representative Butler bringing this forward and Mr. Harder working on it so diligently and getting the definitions clear. We, too, had questions, Representative Gilman, about the numbers and would like to have seen them higher, but we do understand, as Mr. Addington said, the art of compromise, and we agree with Mr. Harder that it would be best to establish the program and then get a feel for what the numbers are eventually. We do like the fact that if the activation under ABC is spelled out clearly and there's no tag implication to unit-wide as well, and that was the question we had on the first go-around. So that concludes my testimony, and again, thank you to Representative Butler and Mr. Harder.
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Guides and Packers Association. I think it's fair to say that when this legislation came out, we were interested in seeing its passage, but we all blanched at the fiscal impact that was reported on the original legislation. Also significant concerns about its effect on licensing and how that would impact the Department of Fish and Wildlife and their wildlife management capabilities. I think what we've done here is we've created some important sideboards, but we also have created a mechanism that creates more responsiveness for the for local counties to respond in a given situations. We heard a lot made about the number of complaints that come to the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the challenge for them to stay on top of that. And this gives us an outlet. And so it's a good piece of legislation. I want to give credit to Rod Harder because, frankly, his was when we were milling around out in the hallways after the first hearing. It was Harder that stepped up with some sage experience and had some ideas. And his first idea wasn't the final idea, and it showed his willingness to work with people and to get something that could go forward with broad consensus. So many thanks to Rod. I've learned a lot of things in working with him over the years. Some good, some bad. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Rod Clawitter, good to see you. Welcome.
Thank you.
For the record, state your name.
For the record, my name is Rod Clawitter. I'm president of Oregon United Sporting Dog Association. We were one of the groups that had concerns with this concept. As it says in the testimony, we're here today to support it. A variety of issues, fiscal impact to the department, budgetary concerns. I would reiterate that this is in response to an ongoing problem that has yet to be dealt with in any effective manner. The letter that's attached to this was also included in the testimony a couple weeks ago. If you haven't taken time to read it, it's hard to read because it's an email. I get calls like this on a fairly regular basis. I'm not exactly certain. I've heard a couple different numbers. Either 22 or 24 counties within the state of Oregon are cooperating members with ADC. Especially, and that those counties themselves have issues at times in the timeliness of a response and in the ability of ODF&W or Wildlife Services to respond in a timely manner. There are some legal restrictions that have gone back and forth in the past 8 years about who can respond, whether they have to be paid. The Department of Fish and Wildlife, according to an AG opinion, for an agent to respond for public safety, they have to be a paid agent of the state. They have to be a paid employee. Speaking of fiscal impact, for those other counties, that lady, I'm assuming, I don't know that, but I assume that she's from Josephine County, who is not a cooperating member in the ADC, in the Wildlife Services Program. I think she's fairly plain in her frustration with being unable to get any assistance to deal with it. I have not received, I forwarded her a couple of names of locals, individuals, that might be able to help her with that. I have not heard another word from her, so I'm not sure what that means, but hopefully, you know, her issue was addressed a little late, but addressed. As this moves forward, I guess the only other thing I would say is that OUSDA would be willing to at least attempt to provide volunteers on a local basis with some ability and resources to deal with some of these predation and situations. Other than that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, members, questions? Hearing none. Thank you. Thank the three of you very much. Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2574? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2574 and open a work session on House Bill 2574. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, does this have any kind of referral? Step out here.
That's a very good question, actually, Representative.
Mr. Chair, the original bill has no subsequent referral. If the Dash 2 amendments were to be brought into the bill by the committee, we would have to get an analysis by the Legislative Fiscal Office to go ahead and tell us what our needed subsequent referral. The proper way to do that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, would be to move the Dash 2 amendments into the bill today and schedule this for another hearing, another work session, to where you could look at the fiscal. Otherwise, you would be taking a chance on making an error wherever it would be sent.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I would move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2574.
Members, the Dash 2 movement. Now, let's start over again here. Members, Representative Smith has moved the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2574. Discussion? Hearing none. Objection? Hearing none. So ordered. And we're going to close the work session on House Bill 2574 in light of the obtaining of a fiscal. And with that, members, I think we are finished with our agenda for today. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
So, are you sure?